All right, special Wednesday night edition of the Padres Collective with John Schaefer. We've got Matt Devine, DSG, and of course, Kevin Acey from the San Diego Union-Tribune, who has been a bi-coastal traveler from the WBC in Miami back to Peoria in Arizona. There's a lot to get into, gentlemen. It is great to be with you on this Wednesday night. And if you're here live or on replay, you got to subscribe to this channel. We've done now this is our third episode, and we've got over 1,000 subscribers. So please subscribe. We have year-round weekly Padres content for you. So please subscribe and smash that like button for us. We're looking for 200 likes on this video here tonight. A lot to get into. Hope you both are doing well. I'm sure we all probably consume the WBC in different ways. Kevin, as a media member in Miami for the last couple of games. Matt and I watching as fans and just some intriguing, compelling games. And now kind of the aftermath. U.S. loses. Mason Miller kind of in the center of what has been a pretty unique story over the last 24 or 48 hours. So I guess let's just start with you, Kevin. I mean, you were there for everything that has played out. I don't think Mason Miller not appearing is the reason why the U.S. didn't win this, but it is an interesting talking point coming out of a close game that the U.S. lost.
It is. I think it's an interesting talking point because it kind of touches all the talking points around the WBC. Because, like, if that was a truly important game where the manager of that team didn't have restrictions put on him by other teams, Mason Miller would have pitched the ninth inning of a tie game, right? I knew he wasn't going to, and you know, because the Padres said it was okay. And Mark DeRosa basically said that before the game, maybe not totally directly as he did after the game, but he said he was available if they had a lead. And that's the Padres, right? They, not only are they paying $4 million this year and expecting Mason Miller to be their closer for another 3 years, they gave up Leo DeVries. You know, this is just like Tarek Skubal making one start, right? Like, he has that right, and his agent has that right, and the team has that right. Now, it looked to me like Mason Miller wanted to pitch. I didn't wait the 3 hours after the game. I had an early flight to talk to Mason. I'll talk to him tomorrow. Clearly, Mason wanted to pitch. I don't know what you guys thought in terms of, because my thing is this. It's never going to be more than a glorified exhibition. And we can get into how important it was to the Venezuelan players. We can get into how important it was to the, I'm not saying it's not important to these guys at all. It was important to the United States players by all impressions. But like, what you think about what Mason Miller not being available says about that tournament?
Yeah, I mean, Kevin, that's pretty spot on. I'm watching. I have a Twitter feed pulled up, and it's Mason Miller getting his, silver medal, and he like takes it off right away. You could tell he was a little, bummed about kind of how the situation went down. Let's be honest. The World Baseball Classic is awesome, right? It's so fun to watch. Right before the season, Kevin, you're out there in Peoria. John, you do a 4-hour show. Spring training gets a little boring. Let's say I consider myself in the elite company of Padres fans. I haven't missed a game in 10 years, regular season. Even some spring training, I'm like, I'm a little tapped out, man. You see some of these names, it's a seventh inning against the Red. It's a split squad. I'm like, I'm good on that. So the World
Baseball I'm actually glad to hear that, Matt, because I'd be worried about you if that weren't the case.
Yeah. There's levels. I could be a little much, but even spring training's a little much for me. But yeah, watching the World Baseball Classic, it was something to watch. It gets you kind of ready for baseball season, right? Other countries care more about it than the United States. That's the bottom line. Does that mean that all the American players, hate baseball or hate it? No. Other countries, for example, Fernando Tatis Jr., this was his first chance to play for the Dominican Republic, given that 2023 he wasn't able to. If you know anything about Tatis, his social media presence, he's very proud to be Dominican. A lot of these players, extremely proud to represent their countries. It's awesome. If you have to find a way to hate on this, it's like, come on, man. It's a fun tournament. Is it the World Series? No. Some players, I saw J-Rod say, like, oh, I don't know which one I'd rather have. I mean, I'm not a player, and I'm also an American, right? And there's people have different perspectives from where they're from. And I think that's amazing, and it's such a cool tournament. That being said, as a Padres fan, I was ecstatic that Mason Miller didn't pitch last night. I could care. Oh, man, we really need him in the 2-2 game. Hey, how about we get a hit off of Eduardo Rodriguez in his CRA, who I thought they were going to DFA from the D-backs last year, and he's going 4-shutty against us. That's the problem. It's not Mark DeRosa not pitching Mason Miller. Also, Garrett Whitlock, buddy, come on, man.
Big guy, big Ben Nails. Yeah.
He's been good. I'm like, you gotta show up. He didn't show up and we lost.
Here's I'm with you. I think it's a really good event. I credit baseball for growing it the way it's grown. I mean, you're talking like 10 million viewers for this title game. I mean, it's definitely gotten people talking about baseball before the season more so than Cactus or Grapefruit League. Tell there is a level of care in general, whether it's U.S. players, Venezuelan, whatever it is. Here are just I think this is fair to be. These are my issues. Any like one and done baseball tournament, you have to take with the grain of salt of it's a one and done baseball tournament. Baseball is so rarely played in that form. I mean, I think about the history of the game. We had the one game wild cards for a brief period,
but they've been playing that world.
Yeah, exactly. It was stupid. I mean, back in the day, the World Series was best of nine. So that's like crazy. Everyone under – like the Dodgers could lose 5 of 6 to the Pirates. They have actually at some point in the last like 6 years and still appeared in a World Series. I mean, we know that what we would say is that's just baseball. Dodgers have lost, have been swept at home by the Rockies in the last 3 years. So, okay, it is what it is. You got to fit it into a two-week period of time. That's fair. My issue is if it's going to be like any other major sporting event, in every other major sporting event, there aren't restrictions on players. You know, like pitch limits, usage limits coming from the respective clubs. And I understand it. Like to Matt's point, nobody wants to see Mason Miller get hurt. But like in Olympic hockey, it's not like a player can play 9 shifts. Or in, you know, it's like you're either the Pro Bowl, which is just entertainment, or you're the Super Bowl, which is all that matters is winning. And it's hard when you get the middle ground, which is like, hey, it's fun, but there's all these restrictions and we got to call the Padres to see Mason Miller's availability. So it's not to discredit Venezuela, credit them. They won the game fair and square. It's absolutely reasonable. But again, look at it like this. If the Padres were playing a 3-game series against the Cubs April 9th and Mason Miller hadn't pitched the day before, he'd likely pitch that game. And he didn't pitch in the championship game, the WBC. So I just would say I personally take it with a little bit of a grain of salt.
Yeah. I mean, that's a completely valid reason. Also, I loved your point, John, about, you know, teams in one game, right? So I'm looking right now, and you brought up the Pirates and the Dodgers. And if I get a shot to, you know, throw a little jab at LA, I'm going to. The Los Angeles Angels in 2025 went 72-90, and they went 6-0 against the Dodgers. Right. So
remember that.
Regular season baseball is very different. Kevin, I'd love to hear your perspective from being there, right? Because I did hear, you know, you hear the crowd, and you see the passion from some of these fans, not saying that the American fans weren't passionate. There were a lot of people there dressed in, you know, bald eagles and wearing all their stuff. And I think that's great. Could you instantly tell the difference in the fan base, how much they care as well compared to the United States?
Yes, absolutely. And again, not ripping it. I was impressed by the amount of United States fans and how many of them dressed out. And last night in particular, how loud they were. Still didn't compare to the Venezuelan fans. I went to bed every night in my hotel still hearing the drums. Like, and here's the thing. It's not that Petco Park wasn't louder at times. We're talking about 15,000 more fans, you know, or 9,000, I guess. I'm sorry. I'm not used to Lone Depot Park being full. But like, or it's not that Petco Park didn't peak at higher decibel levels during the regular season even, and certainly in the playoffs. It's from before the first pitch to the end of the game, it's not a murmur. It's like you can't tell what's happening in the game like you can a regular baseball game. It is so loud all the time. They're so smart. They are up and they stay up at all the right moments. They've got their instruments, but it's the constant noise and their knowledge of the game that is it's really impressive and it's really special. And so that's why I want to make sure, and we have to say, and then if you saw the reaction in Venezuela,
it's incredible.
Read this blog. It's Caracas Central, or there's, I'll post it later. This guy wrote about the scene that was there. Now, of course, they don't really have TV regularly available to them there. So they had to gather 100,000 people in the square there. Right. But they got a national holiday today. This was so big to them.
It's incredible. It was awesome to see. And I know everybody always has, and myself included, right? Especially in the age of social media, right? Everybody has to have an opinion. Oh, you know, the Americans or these players don't care about the country or like this or that. Sometimes you could just be like, hey, that was a cool event. 2 weeks, no major injuries. I know Seiya Suzuki kind of went down a little bit, but at least as a Padres fan, I'll be completely honest. I was scared, you know, word I probably can't say on this platform. I was very scared that one of our guys was going to get hurt, especially after the Edwin Diaz situation. So the fact that overall it seemed like everybody had a good time, all the players are back. You know, hey, congratulations to my man Luis Arraez in Venezuela. It's such an awesome thing, and the people of Venezuela should be super happy. And seeing those videos and stuff that went kind of viral, it's just an awesome event. That being said, in 7 days, that's when the real party starts. If you are, I'm a baseball fan, but like there's something different about Major League Baseball in my opinion, deep down.
Maybe that's just
the American in me. I don't know.
Yeah, that's how I feel the same way, because like you've been doing this, I think there's been 6 events and there was one canceled because of the pandemic. Like I've said this a lot recently. Like I've never looked at baseball as an internationally displayed game. I know it's an international game, but there's so few examples of like international tournaments of relevance. Like I don't think of the Olympics as the best way to judge nations, because oftentimes it's been played with amateurs. Now maybe that changes in LA in 2028, and maybe it draws this level of intrigue. And then when I think about the WBC, it's every third year. You know, we're using ABS in like Marlins Cardinals games in Jupiter, but we're not using it in, you know, semifinal games between the US and Dominican. It's just, I like the event. It has grown on me, but to Matt's point, and I think most of our viewers feel the same way, it's the Padres collective. I mean, I think most people would prefer the Padres go 92-70 with the US finishing in second than the Padres going 91-71.
Don't even make the rest of the tournament. Just give me 90-72. The USA could forfeit. I couldn't agree more. I have a question for you guys, though, on this. Mason Miller, obviously the big pitch against Geraldo Perdomo, strikeout, game over, no ABS, like we mentioned. Up next was Fernando Tatis Jr.
Yep.
And I tweeted it. I genuinely think we dodged a real bullet there, because I think knowing Tatis, at least he wears his heart on his sleeve, right? And he was really proud to play for the Dominican. If Mason Miller strikes him out and that's the last image of the Dominican Republic's World Baseball Classic, I think there's going to be a little bit of a rift in the clubhouse. You want to believe these are adults and professionals, but as a fan, it concerned me. So shout out that ump, and thankfully ABS wasn't there, because I, as a concerned fan, I could 100% see that being a little bit of an issue going forward. If it would have
lasted, but I think the rest of your points are valid. Okay. Even Cal Raleigh came out. He didn't get a lot of pub. I actually didn't see it anywhere, but he came out last night to congratulate Eugenio Suarez, take pictures with his family and all that stuff. I mean, Cal Raleigh, well, you know, gosh, he got killed.
Yeah, he's been having a tough PR week for Big Dumper.
Yeah, it was kind of – I find that a little – you know, it's funny you mentioned that. There's a question that Kevin can't see on screen. I'll get to in 1 second. Two questions coming out of that. Tatis is, like, hugging and shaking hands and, you know, Tatis did it the opposite way of Cal Raleigh. Not to say one was right or one was wrong, but it also took me down the path of Mason Miller gets, like, the silver medal, and he's walking off, and he immediately takes it off, which is – honestly, I'm completely cool with. I get it. Yeah. They wanted to win. But it's like, everyone's cool with that, right? Like Mason Miller, nobody wants a silver medal in this thing. That's completely reasonable, right?
I just don't get upset about stuff. So I'm the wrong guy to ask, but both of those things, I mean, if we're cool with how, and we are, with how the Latin American players celebrate.
Yeah.
We got to be cool with American stuff. Like not shaking your opponent's hand. That's old school. Way to go, pal. Right. Mm-hmm. And then, Mason Miller, if you're not first, you're last. Absolutely. I'm down. But I don't get that upset over stuff like at all. And especially since I embraced the bat flips. And by the way, because they didn't win, it didn't get enough attention. Probably, of course, you can tell me, Matt, I'm not on social media. How about the bat toss by Bryce Harper last night? Like that was a timer.
I was really hoping that homer meant a little bit more, because that was his second biggest home run ever. And unfortunately, the biggest one was against our boys, against Bobby Fastballs. It was cool, man. It was just a cool tournament, right? And like I said a little bit earlier, it's like sometimes you could just be like, hey, that was awesome. And then, you know, it's over, right? It was only, what, a week and a half, 2 weeks? It's all good. Awesome tournament. Opening day's on Wednesday. I'm actually going because I'm up in the Bay. I'm going to Giants Yankees.
Oh, you're going to the Wednesday Giants game. I'm going to Giants Yankees,
and then I'll be in San Diego for Giants Padres, which will be fun. So I'm
amazing.
Excited.
Before we move on to our next topic, there's a question here in the chat from a loyal viewer of John and Jim, my buddy Jeff, who says, question for AC, do you think this WBC will help propel the next one in 2029, or will the impending lockout deflate the momentum this one had for fans?
I think this will propel it. Now, that's for everywhere but the United States. let's see what this, possible slash probable lockout does here in the United States. I mean, I think it's absurd that baseball and the players and whoever, whatever, would have a lockout and lose games. I think that's just awful. But they always seem to bounce back. They won't have the help of steroids and juiced homers this time to bring them back like they did after 94. But it always tends to come back. The 29, look, players by and large are stoked to play in the Olympics. And that could be a test case for them altering the format. There's a big momentum for this. And by the way, Netflix Japan just paid $100 million and TV money or whatever, streaming money, talks. That could be a test case for altering the format of the WBC and having the knockout rounds in the middle of the season going forward. That's a possibility. We don't have time. This is the Padres Collective. There's always going to be issues with player usage. Teams are never going to be okay with it. But in terms of players being built up, that's a thought that could help. So, look, in the United States, the lockout's not going to diminish it any for the Venezuelan fans who want their team to repeat. But I mean, I don't know what you guys think, but like that lockout, man, I just think it's absurd.
Yeah. I mean, it's a bridge we'll cross when we need to, but it sounds like it is a bridge we will be crossing at some point this offseason. Let's move to our next topic. Again, John Schaefer, Matt Devine, Kevin Acey. If you are here, subscribe. Year-round weekly Padres content for you. Smash that like button for us. And yes, please subscribe to this brand new Padres Collective channel. The rotation is becoming maybe problematic, and the season hasn't started. Again, we said this so much, and we've probably even said on the collective, that on paper, it looked good. When you said it a couple of weeks ago, you said Pivetta and King and Musgrove. Everyone has said that all offseason. Hey, the top of your rotation. There's also been those that have been like, well, hold on. King's coming off injury. Musgrove's coming off significant injury. And now, Kevin, your reporting will signal that Joe Musgrove, almost a formality at this point, obviously is going to start the year on the injured list. So, okay, it's one of five, but it's more than that. There's this trickle effect, and they didn't spend in starting pitching this offseason. There's still some pitchers out there, including Lucas Giolito, but where do the Padres stand here with opening day 8 days away?
It's been a formality for 10 days now, really. Yeah. I mean, there's just a point where you don't come back and get ready and the way that they were talking. And yeah, you're right. It's one guy, but the trickle effect, and it was already a question. And the fact that this was some sort of quote-unquote setback, and Joe used the word setback, so I'll use it, was expected at some point. Whether that was in the form of some sort of fortuitous IL stint in June or July, or they started going 7-8 days between his starts, Joe wasn't going to make 30 starts, probably not even 28. Now he almost certainly will not do that. So it's a big deal. This puts more on the other three guys. They can't pitch like that, but it definitely puts more on them. When I'm talking about Randy Vasquez, Michael King, and Nick Pivetta, there is legit concern, legit like acknowledgement within the organization that this is a problem. That not Joe, the death, not 1, 2, 3, even though they are kind of waiting for Michael King to show that he's going to be okay. They think he is, but like spring hasn't been great. But the idea that you're going to need 10 starters probably at least, right? And 4, 5, 6, 7, those numbers are big because you're probably going to need even 5 starts from your number 7 guy and, 8, 10 starts from your number 6 guy. And so who are those guys? And I'll let you guys chime in, but I wrote last week about the possibility they won't even have 5 at the start of the season. I don't think that's going to be the case. I think they're going to have 5. Germán Márquez is going to be on there. But the fact is the schedule combined with their lack of options, they could go with 4 starters at the start of the season.
Yeah, it's not good. When I saw the Joe Musgrove piece that you wrote, and he said after throwing like three innings against Great Britain, he's like, oh, it feels like I had surgery again. It's not what you want to see from a guy coming off of a big arm injury.
And I want to make sure that it's clear. He said, I feel like I have surgery, like the effects of surgery. I just want to make sure he didn't say like his arm was about to fall off. But anyway, okay. Go ahead.
That actually, hey, that's why we did the show, Kevin, because it's people like me, my reading comprehension that starts to worry. But no, Joe, obviously, man, he cares. There's no doubt, right? He wants to be out there. You talk to anyone, he's the guy that wants to be there more than anyone. That being said, your best availability is availability, right? And the fact that he is starting this season on the IL, we have still no idea about, you know, you and what's going on in that situation. It's a lot of money on the IL for a team that's really struggling, right? So you really have to put a lot of money or a lot of trust in these kind of minor league deal guys, right? And fringe-y pitchers. So when you really think about it, and I was impressed by Walker Buehler. I think Walker Buehler can hang. I think Germán Márquez can hang. And what kind of, in a weird way, I'm excited about is I do think sometimes these type of situations, people show up, right? When you get an opportunity, you show up. Matt Waldron's looked all right during spring. There's a couple of these guys who are fighting for, hey, this might be my last shot to be a starting pitcher in Major League Baseball, right? So you hope that they get it. Relying on majority of your dudes being, you know, 5 ERA guys and then praying Michael King finds it again. That I'm honestly concerned. Joe's situation is whatever. We really need Michael King, Nick Pivetta, and then Randy V to not be fluke, right? The Randy V resurgence. Starting pitching is easily the weak point. And I'm glad to hear that the organization understands that, because you would assume, right? Anyone that knows an ounce of baseball knows this rotation is pretty bad. So how do you fix that? And what I keep seeing, and it seems like every game, Bradley Rodriguez has 2 Ks and it's like one inning. The amount of relievers this team has, it seems like, okay, you have a surplus of one thing and you have none of the other. So how do you fix that? Do you make it so that, you know, two times through the rotation, I'll allow this guy to go, and then we play David Morgan for 2 innings every three? Like, how do you have to get creative? What does make me feel better is that, and I don't know if this is, you know, a real thing or not, but Craig Stammen being a reliever, I feel like he has a little bit better of an understanding of what a reliever can do, right? What a guy like David Morgan, am I asking too much of this guy, right? If I'm making him pitch, you know, 2 innings, you know, every 3 days, right? Like, understanding the bullpen is what I'm hoping Craig Stammen, you know, I hope that's one of his strengths.
You know, it's interesting because you see like a potentially outstanding bullpen and you say, oh, let's just rely more heavily on the bullpen. But the history of modern baseball supports that there's a threshold there where if you're getting 4 innings from your starters and 5 innings from your relievers, you're heading down a bad path. Yeah. Even because it's just the sheer inning math, right? That the math supports you'd prefer the opposite, which is 5, then 4, as opposed to 4, then 5, and beyond 5 from your rotation. I mean, to me, the answer, and maybe some of it, Kevin, is tied to Yu Darvish and his contract status, but Lucas Giolito sitting out there, certainly there's a risk associated with it. It costs, can they just write a check and take care of this? Because otherwise it seems very wishful to me to be like, and Marquez, you know, maybe, and Buehler, maybe. And it to me, it's like, you need a surefire pitcher that's going to pitch every fifth or sixth day, as opposed to a bunch of, I mean, 2021 wasn't forever ago. And just the PTSD of 2021 is kind of scary heading into a year.
Yeah, I haven't dug into the Giolito thing much other than heard his name around a little bit. But in terms of like, is there a chance that this guy's going to be around still when the Padres have money? And by that, I mean when they have a new owner. They're not going to write a check right now, okay? Now, I don't know where Giolito's price is. So yeah, I'm not saying it's out of the realm, but like, you know, their whole strategy was to wait guys out and see if the money could come down. And none of it ever came down enough except for Germán Márquez. The bullpen thing, they are not going to go to the point where they're taxing those guys, but they are going to lean on them. They are. I don't care about anything. They are going to. And Craig Stammen, great point, because Craig Stammen values the potential and he values the value of the middle reliever, the Kyle Hart giving you two or three, Logan Gillespie giving you two or three. Like maybe he brings back Matt Waldron to give two or three, or that's when Herman Marquez goes and moves to two or three. They will, he and Ruben will find a way to, well, I shouldn't say that. It's going to be dependent on performances. They'll find a way to, if they have the pitching staff they think they do, to try to piece it together until the cavalry can come, if it does come. I mean, there's great hope in the organization. I wrote about this, about the new owner and the possibility that there's going to be an infusion shortly after they come. Now, some of that is just hopeful and speculation by them, though some of the people I've talked to have met these potential new owners. I have no idea what was said. I don't. I'm just saying, like, it's maybe not completely out of the realm of possibility. And certainly you would think that at the trade deadline, AJ Preller will have more freedom than he would have had under these owners. The other thing is this. Check me if I'm wrong. I don't like to just spout off statistics that I could be way off base on. The Dodgers had like one pitcher go over 150 innings last year.
Yep.
Now, the difference is the Padres don't have Shohei Ohtani and Tyler Glasnow walking through the door. All right. Where, you know, at the end of the season, oh, it's cool. We're going to have two of the best pitchers in the league come in and take care of things here. And they also don't have Yoshinobu Yamamoto, Blake Snell at the top. But like, how about you score some freaking runs too? Okay. I mean, take some pressure off. So again, like, it isn't just the rotation that is that there's more pressure on, it's the whole team there's more pressure on.
Yeah, if we hit, none of these problems, right? I believe that Herman Marquez and Walker Buehler can pitch 100 innings possibly at a 4.5 to 5 ERA.
Matt, if they do that, then now
that's a huge
barring one. Catastrophic something out of guys you're expecting to give you 120 to 180.
Yeah,
if they do that, that's good.
And I think it's great. Yeah. So I also think when we see 4.5 and 5 or like high four ERAs, right? It looks bad. Let's be honest. Like, that guy must stink, right? But for what a pitcher is, right? Not every single guy is going to be your ace. You just need a guy that can get out there and give your team a shot. If you give up 3 earned runs in 5 innings and you're the number 5 guy in our rotation, I consider that a win. It's fine. Like, then you go and you hope that the, you know, $25 million a year shortstop and the $30 million a year third baseman and the, you know, $25 million a year right fielder can score some runs, because we're putting a lot of grief and a lot of pressure on, oh man, we need Herman Marquez to really show up. No, we need Manny Machado to show up. If Manny Machado hits 35 home runs, we're probably not really arguing too much about the 4-5 guy in the rotation. We need our big dogs to play well.
Did we have this conversation last week? I think it's like some of this evens out. Like, if you allow a third of a run more per game, like let's just say they do, but if you score, you know, 0.4 of a run more per game, like you just do the math on 162, whatever that is. I mean, if you're scoring half a run more per game, that's 80 more runs. You know, if you can score 80 more and give up 70 more, you're good.
Yeah.
Now the math has to be able to support that. There's reasons to believe just inherently the 28th best slug team is going to be better. Like, I mean, it would be shockingly disappointing if the Padres are 28th in slug in 2026. So if they go from 28th to 18th and the rotation, and I don't even know where the rotation was, but takes a reasonable step back, but you're still relying on your bullpen, I think it all probably still works itself out. It's not typically, as Kevin, you know, not typically how the Padres are built. I mean, they've invested heavily in their offense, but it hasn't necessarily always worked in that manner.
But the point that you're making, because the catcher you presume is going to hit better than 204. And you know, Laureano, even if he regresses, let's say where Laureano goes to his career 760 OPS, better than what the Padres have had outside of Juan Soto and Jurickson Profar in forever. Cronenworth, if he really did figure out some things and shorten his swing and a lot of things that contributed to last year. Jackson Merrill healthy. Point about, like, we're not saying shoot for the stars here,
right?
But being better than sucking, then that's a big difference.
Yeah,
completely. I love your point, John, on the 28th and slug, right? And I kind of wanted to ask Kevin this as well. Steven Souza Jr., have you already heard, because I know you mentioned, I think on the first episode, you know, spring training, everybody loves a new hitting coach, all gravy, no worries, right? You go through your first slump, and then you start seeing some articles like, oh, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about. Do you think there's a new, because I remember it might have been a piece or an interview or something I heard or read it online, and it said he's trying to have the team punish mistakes. And I think that's something that we didn't do last year a lot of. I'm curious if you've heard, you know, from any of the players, like, hey, we've changed. There's been a huge fundamental shift. How I was last year is completely different. Or is it more like, oh, I like having Steven here. He's given us a couple pointers, but it's, I'm a professional at the end of the day. It's really not going to make that much of a difference.
First thing I want to say is Victor Rodriguez said punish mistakes too. And I'm assuming every hitting coach since the beginning of time has said that. But I just want to make sure I'm clear on that, because we get into this thing, and the media is very guilty of it, is you don't mean to a lot of the times, but you end up making the old guy sound like he didn't know what he was doing because the new guy's here and he's doing all these things. So then to the rest of your question, these guys love Steven Souza Jr. He speaks their language, right? And yes, I think it's about more of consistency and letting guys be who they are. So if you do pull the ball a lot, okay. But like, and also getting back to Petco Park hitting, sure, right? Like the first year of Victor Rodriguez. But Steven Souza Jr., when he talks to these guys, from my understanding, and I can tell just the way I talk to him, there's just this... he explains in a very simple way a guy's mechanics. Like, and they listen, the three of us here, we don't know what we're talking about. When it comes down to all the knowledge that Steven Souza Jr. has. So for me to say that he explains and he makes me visualize what's going on with Tatis' swing, if he can do that for me, think about what he's doing for the players. Yeah. And that's what it feels like the players are absorbing.
Let's continue on. Next topic here on the Padres Collective. Again, if you are here live or on replay, you must subscribe. That's the one thing we ask. Please subscribe to this channel. We are here for you throughout the Padres season. Please subscribe. We have weekly content for you on the Padres Collective. And please smash that like button for us as well. Trying to get to 200 likes here this evening. This is a polarizing two words, Luis Campusano. We have talked about this guy as long as like anyone in the history of this organization. Normally, we put no stock in spring numbers. But when you literally go hitless in a regular season and then you start a spring training, which is about to end by hitting whatever he's hitting, 5-for-29 with two doubles and, you know, an OPS under 500, Kevin, he is their backup catcher. I mean, they have no other option. So is the hope that just, well, you know, he's going to do better than he did last year. We're going to need him to do that. They don't really have an option. It's sink or swim, I would assume, for Luis Campusano.
Right. I mean, yeah, 5-for-29 is better than Diaz and Maldonado hit, and I'm joking, but I just want to point that out. That like, if Freddie Fermin can be what he has been, and that's what Campusano is, it's still an improvement. In no way am I saying that's okay, but this is the bed they made, and there really wasn't, unless Duran really stepped up. I mean, they were pretty excited about him, but that was really always a long shot. And really what it is this is finally it, right? Like we thought it before, but this is it. What more are we going to do to send this guy down to lead all of AAA in hitting again, right? Like let's have him here. His AAA hitting coach is here. He's got a new hitting coach, obviously Steven Souza Jr. They have, I wrote about this earlier, like, holy smokes, just worked so hard to infuse him with confidence and that they believe in him. All right. And I'm willing to say, okay, let's see what happens in the regular season because spring training is spring training. But that's not to discount what you said. When a guy's coming off an over 21 or something, let's not forget those six walks. Let's see. He put like 15 balls in play, 14 balls hit to the left side of the infield too. I mean, it was just... led AAA in OPS the worst at bats some people in the Padres organization say they've ever seen in their life. That was the contrast of Luis Camposano last year. And so there is validity in like in the dread of it, but yeah, he's the guy. So root for him if you're a Padre fan.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, right. Like that's, and Kevin, I like what you said. It's like, this is it right for Campy. He's one of the few people that have survived the Padres farm system. That seems like it's like, if you're in there, you're getting traded. So he survived somehow. It's been up and down, up and down. I do have a friend that, you know, played AAA against Campy a lot. And so they became friendly because AAA, right. You're like, hey, there's not much to do in El Paso. So a lot of these players hang out after the games. And from what I've heard, the relationship was not good between Campy and Mike Schilt. Mike Schilt was not a fan of Luis Camposano for multiple reasons. You know, don't have to get into it on the call. Schilt's not here anymore, right? There's no excuse. Campy, you get one more shot. I think going into the season, am I more disappointed or am I more scared about our backup catching situation than I did last year? No. Martin Maldonado was on his last legs, right? At least with Luis Camposano, what was it, 2023 maybe? I saw him hit.
I saw him hit a year.
Not like I haven't seen this guy hit in Major League Baseball. There's two things that are going to happen, right? He's going to be a solid backup catcher when he gets a shot this year. Hits, you know, 8 to 10 home runs. Hopefully isn't terrible on defense. And we look back and we're like, hey, that was a pretty solid season. Or he's not going to be on our team come May. So there's two. We can get a Brett Sullivan back. That's the reality. There's guys that are still playing baseball that you can have be your backup catcher. So they're giving Campy all they can. At the end of the day, as a fan, and this is what I want to – I'm going to try to be a little bit harsher on players this year, right, and giving people the benefit of the doubt in the sense that I don't want to be, you know, Luis Camposano is going to be 38 years old. We're like, hey, maybe this year is the year.
Yeah.
Buddy, you got a shot. You got the shot. You got a new hitting coach. Everything's going in your direction. Freddie Fermin's a great leader. What an awesome guy to have in front of you. It seems like he's all about baseball. Seems like he's all in. You either hit or you don't. And then if you do, we're going to support. And if you don't, adios.
I mean, I probably prefer, all things being equal, the guy hit zero, which is impossible, although he did it last year, and call effective games and work with the pitching staff well, especially everything that we've talked about today with the rotation, then hit and be a train wreck behind the plate. Now, this has always been a conversation about Luis Camposano. Is he at the level where he can consistently call games or catch 60 games in the major leagues? Maybe he is. Maybe it was a thing with Mike Schilt. I don't even know all this.
And Bob Melvin. Let's not forget that.
100%.
Forgot about Mr. Bob.
I mean, I'd rather him be an effective backstop than be an effective hitter. But he's always kind of been opposite of that, at least in AAA. Yeah. I will take a middle ground too, but you got to be something. You can't hit 149 here and be a liability defensively, or you probably can't hit 249 here. Or excuse me, you could hit 149 and be good defensively. But again, if you hit 149 and you're a liability defensively, then there's no room. At some point, you do eventually have to cut bait probably.
It is more important than we generally give credence to is the defensive ability and the pitch, you know, handling, the pitcher handling. If he hits 249 and he's no better as a catcher, they'll take it. Yeah, because I'm assuming the guy will have some doubles and some home 100%. Runs in there if he hits 249. Because I think that's, you know, based on what we've seen recently, 249 is pretty lofty goal.
So I'm looking at the stats right now for Luis Camposano. 2023, he's 24 years old, right? He's playing in the bigs. And he had an 847 OPS. He hit how many home runs? 7 home runs. 1.1 WAR. And I genuinely think his defense is pretty bad. Let's be honest. I do not think he's ever going to get any WAR from defense. So how – and then you have these stats in El Paso. Guys, I know we joke about El Paso being like, oh, this is going to be – you know, oh, it's like hitting on the moon and all this stuff. He is like Barry Bonds on even more steroids in El Paso. It's absolutely insane. There's something there and he just needs to prove it or it's over.
One of the things I hear, and I think this was big, or I'm told this was big for him, that not only are you whatever, the altitude, the thin air, the ballparks, the confidence that gives you, in addition to the fact that you're facing pitchers who make more mistakes, So confidence is big with Camposano. And this isn't me saying it. This is people in the organization saying it. He had, even in 23, because I remember some of the conversations I had to have with him and the questions I had to ask, there were some real low points too in 23. And that's always been the thing, because he started really well in, was it 21? I think, no, 21 was terrible. 22. Off the cliff.
Yeah, he's been pretty much a negative player his entire career, to be completely honest.
I would also say this. Like, you think about Fermin, and he's basically blossoming as a 30-year-old, right? How old is he now?
Yeah, I think 30. It's 30.
The one thing, and this was always my knock on Ethan Salas, where people made him the second coming of, Johnny Bench. It's like, you're 16. A lot of catchers break through at 26. Like, legitimately, the average catcher in the major leagues is not going to be who he is until his mid-20s. And there are guys that are such late bloomers, just like pitchers. I mean, look at Michael King. I mean, if you judge every position player or pitcher by age 22 season, you're doing yourself a disservice, because, yes, some guys break through, like Fernando Tatis Jr., and then there's others that don't blossom until 5 years later than that. No, I'm not saying that's campy, because it does feel like it's been for forever. I've always said this. I thought he was going to be traded for cash at the deadline last year to Cincinnati and hit like 391 in 81 play appearances. I honestly believe his next organization, he will pop in. Yeah. And it's not, and I hope I'm wrong. I hope it's 2026 with the Padres. But you know what I mean? Like, Salas, give him time. Even campy, I wouldn't be shocked if he had a successful major league career, even a career. But I just wonder if it's going to be somewhere else.
Remember too, I forget sometimes until I go back to do like these, what's going on with Campy stories. Guy's been hurt a lot. So he's had a lot of interruptions too. And I don't mean to make excuses for him, but like, I want to paint a full picture. And your point, I did this like 3 years ago, the first time we thought this is it for Campy. I did a research on all the guys in the major leagues over a certain period of time that caught 90 plus games. And when was the first time that they even caught 90 plus games? And it was like age 26. It's like, that's crazy.
Yeah. I would love Campy to, I'd love him to be a good, have a solid season, stay in the bigs the whole year and everything. But kind of like what we were saying earlier, right? And it's not on our side, but it's like, when the team's winning, I don't think the backup catcher is going to change this team from being a playoff team and not a playoff team.
I'm going to respectfully disagree that he can. We always have to remember, we put out these definites, so I don't want to put out these definites. But like last year, man, that number 9 hole, like, that screwed the Padres. If he's
whose place is on fire? Is that you, Matt, or Kevin?
Also, apologize. It's the same. I guess there's a. Let's see.
The SFFD.
Let me go on mute real quick. Sorry about that.
Yeah, the number 9 spot in the order last year, in addition to the 8 spot until they moved Cronenworth there semi permanently, it destroyed the Padres. It was 6 outs a night. So I'm with you. This team, we have to say that every episode, they will go as far as the stars take them, but you can get dragged down big time by a guy hitting, 180.
I agree with you on that. I do agree. I just think it's like, with, if you were to give me right now, Freddie Fermin and Luis Campusano versus Elias Diaz and Martin Maldonado going into a season, and we made the playoffs last year, obviously we traded for Fermin and everything like that. I feel much more confident. And I know Campy didn't get a hit last year. And from all accounts and what Kevin was saying, right, he could live in his head a little bit. And everybody has situations like that, right? But hopefully he gained some confidence this year, right? Hopefully the first or second game of the season, whenever he plays, he hits 2 home runs and he goes on a little bit of a tear. Because we really need him, right? If you've seen, you can have a backup catcher who is okay defensively. We're not asking for we aren't asking for him to be great. And he can have a little bit of pop in that bat. At least when he's up there, hey, he can hit a home run. That's okay. I'm with it. So I'm really rooting for him.
I mean, to the point of like, hey, catchers are late bloomers. And someone just put it like in the chat, like, not to call Luis Camposano Cal Raleigh. But Cal Raleigh wasn't up until he was 24 and didn't pop until he was 26, 27. Now, guy's become one of the great offensive catchers in the history of the game over the last 24 months. And nobody's saying Luis Campusano is necessarily the next Cal Raleigh, but you do have to be careful with catchers. And maybe that's why the Padres held on to him for one additional year, didn't move him last year at the deadline just to move him. At some point, he's going to be gone. I mean, if it doesn't work this year, obviously there's going to come a point where, like, you're not going to be in this, you're not going to have a 20-year career doing what he's done to this point. But yeah, put up or shut up is what I would say.
Well, Bat nailed it. It's not like it's a high bar. I mean, you're going to be able to find a replacement. Above replacement, you're going to be able to find a car.
Yes, I like that.
A backup catcher. Now, here's the thing: just because we might as well deal in worst case scenarios, they're screwed if Fermin gets hurt.
Oh yeah,
I really have no doubt. I have very little doubt that the Fermin Campusano, let's say 162 split, is going to be far better than last year's catchers, at least the first 4 months, the Diaz Maldonado. I believe that he will hit to a certain level and they're going to be much better. Now, if Fermin gets hurt, now you got a problem.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I was just about to say that too. And I have high hopes, man, I just saw that Ryan Burgett and Stephen Kolek aren't in the rotation for the Royals, right? Maybe they end up being, you know, Cy Youngs for the Royals like everybody thought they were going to be. That being said, we don't make that trade. We're having that issue, Kevin, that we're talking about right now, where we don't have – maybe we go and sign – let's bring back Victor Caratini, guys. No, guys, Freddie Fermin, I'm telling you. People always say don't take spring training stats to heart. All I saw that guy do this offseason on Instagram, he was in the gym. It seemed like 6 hours a day. Either that or he – had one gym session and he just saved all the videos and posted it every day. Because this
What he did in the postseason? How about the way he ripped the ball a lot of times in the regular season? Yeah.
He's a gamer, guys. He's a gamer. Out of everybody on our team right now, I'm putting him up in the one or two of the guys that I'm like, I think that guy comes to the ballpark every day and he's like, I need to win. I want to play as hard as I want. I just genuinely like this guy a lot. And I really think he's having a breakout year. He was behind Salvi. All those years in, Kansas City, he comes over. Everyone's like, why did we trade these pitchers for him? He's dealt with some stuff. Now it's his time to shine. So if we have a good Fermin year, man, it'll also take a lot of pressure off Campusano too. If Freddie's able to play a lot and Campy only has to play once or twice a week, I love it.
You're right on Freddie. He's a really nice guy. Merrill or Laureano will kill you to win.
Yeah.
But like you're that doesn't mean you're wrong about Fermin, but like, Laureano and Merrill, they're pretty nuts.
I want to see Fermin and Laureano for the full year. You know, just to see. Now, I wanted to see Juan Soto for a full year too, and it didn't work out. So you know what I mean? But I do want to see Fermin and Laureano for a full year. And I am wondering if you had Kolek and Burgert, how does that change your trajectory for the year? Like if you just kind of reverse the thing.
Yeah.
And you have more starting pitching depth, but now you're really weak in that at backstop. But then again, maybe you address it in the offseason. It's kind of an interesting, if we knew what we knew then, now, when you think about the rotation, what is the value of Stephen Kolek and Ryan Burgert knowing what they're dealing with now compared to where they were maybe when they made that trade 9 months ago?
I think I'm not going to lie. If you were to say go back in time and don't make that trade, I'm happy. I'm happy with it. Is it valuable to have, you know, young, controllable starting pitching, right? Absolutely. Probably the most valuable thing in baseball. And the Padres don't really have any of it. So that's an issue. That being said, Ryan Burgett and Stephen Kolek weren't really, you know, top 100 prospects. We traded Robbie Snelling. That was a real prospect. These other guys kind of just came up. That happens sometimes. Some people find it. That being said, too, you have these minor league deals. Is the drop-off from Walker Buehler and Germán Márquez to Ryan Burgett and Stephen Kolek that huge? I would say it's a drop-off, but is it really that big of a drop-off where you're looking
at it? Maybe it is, maybe it isn't.
Yeah, we don't know.
We don't really know, right?
And I loved watching both of them pitch, but I got to tell you, the way that Ruben Niebla handled those guys last year, if you remember how many innings they went, like right as soon as they got in trouble, you got to remember, like, and look, I don't know the Royals situation. I can't recall if they've had injuries, what their situation yep. is, but like, I'm with you. What I'm doing, Matt, is I'm agreeing with you. Like, I'd make that trade again. I would.
Especially yeah. with Fermin having control, right? Isn't he under control for like?
Yeah, he's under control.
That's it. We yeah. get the prime of Freddie Fermin, and from what all from all accounts, he seems like a guy that I'm excited to have play for our team.
Dude is a free agent in 2030. All right,
it's like so Mason Miller.
Basically, his career will almost be over, or at least his career of catching 100 games, if that's what he is doing until then.
That's why I like the Mason Miller deal, because you're not just getting the player for a year. Everyone's like, oh, you gave up your top prospect. Yeah, but you get a controllable best pitcher in the history of the game. It's like, so, I mean, that's his upside is that ridiculous that, yeah, okay, so you gave up a top prospect, but you're trying to hold leads.
Maybe Leo becomes what I mean, he looks great in spring, and he's going to have a great career, and I'm happy for Leo.
He could.
And we mentioned this on the last call. Not every trade, Kevin, you said it. You're like, not every trade has to be these guys won, these guys lost. Also, it's 2026. Leo's like 14 years old. Like we'll find out. We'll find out down the road if he has a Hall of Fame career and whatever happens to Mason Miller. That being said, I work up in San Francisco. Come to the office. Mason Miller's a name. It's kind of fun to have a name, right? It's Tatis level kind of the kids call it aura, right? Where you're like, man, we have that guy on our team. We have the scariest reliever in baseball. Had my fantasy baseball draft earlier today. First reliever off the board. Mason Miller, that's a Padre. And for three more years, it's not like it's 1 year. And then you got Adrian Morejon throwing 101 miles per hour. I mean, this bullpen, I know we mentioned that bullpens are hard to rely on because they're very, up or down, everything like that. But if you have enough talent, like we do, guys like Bradley Rodriguez might not even make the team. And this guy would be a seventh inning guy for 15 teams in baseball right now. So if you have enough talent, I really think, and they're going to rely on the bullpen. I love where the bullpen's at. If we could just get, I'm just praying Walker Buehler or Germán Márquez can just hang in there, man. And Joe comes back and gives us a decent little run.
Yeah, they're veterans too. Like if they got to wear one, they'll do it. They know the situation in the game. Now look, maybe they proved to be washed up, Márquez and Buehler, but like, It is a valuable thing to have veterans. And those other two guys, again, first off, loved talking to them because I'm selfish. I wanted to mention that first. But what really matters, the only thing that matters, is what kind of pitchers they were. They were okay, all right? They were okay. And what you got for them, the potential, you have to remember where teams are at, too. They needed a freaking catcher. They might not have gone to the playoffs last year if Maldonado and Diaz were their catchers for the final months. They might not have gone to the playoffs if they did not get Mason Miller, right? That's the thing you got to remember, too. Plus, if Leo DeBrees goes to the Hall of Fame, but Mason Miller closed out one Game 7 of a World Series,
you'll take it. Every day of the week.
Padres fans should go to Leo DeBrees' Hall of Fame ceremony and cheer for him. Thank him for the part he played in the World Series championship.
Yeah, and you should go to Mason Miller's Cooperstown induction as well.
I mean, that's more likely. That's probably more likely than Leo right now, to be completely honest.
The only issue, I feel like, this is where I give Preller a lot of credit. It's like he yings where other teams yang. Like he has built up a bullpen, this masterful bullpen that's supposed to win in the postseason. Unfortunately, it hasn't the last 2 years. We all understand the issue that your bullpen can't save you from trailing, which again, I'm not concerned about in the regular season. You got to get there. And I think with someone like Mason Miller, you're holding leads, and which is going to be so valuable because their margins aren't going to be great. So the difference between 10 blown saves and 2 blown saves is the difference between being in or out of the postseason. So I'm all for it. I just hope one time around, they've got the bullpen with the leads, because in 2024, they had the bullpen, but they didn't have the lead. In 2025, they had the bullpen. Like at some point, just put the thing together, because you got the bullpen. But now it's on the offense to give you that 3-2 lead, not be trailing 2-1 every single time you're playing a meaningful game.
That was a 100-win bullpen last year. They had the best 100%. Record. 100%. When they had the best record in the major leagues when leading after 6 innings. Okay, exactly. And that's their plan this year. Boom, man. Yeah. And that's why Bradley Rodriguez is making this team. And don't be surprised if he opens a couple games. Then they go to David Morgan. Then they go to Kyle Hart or vice versa. And then boom, you know, you slide out those last four innings with, you know, Estrada, Morahone, and Miller. Boom. Because Morahone and Estrada can go 1.1 or 1.2 innings. So, like, yeah, like, I'm fired up about this bullpen, too. Like, it is, it's just, I can't get past, oh, my point. Before I get to how I can't get past the rotation.
Yeah.
They had the best record in the major leagues leading after six innings, but they had like 20 fewer games than like the Phillies, the Yankees. Like, they need to freaking score.
They got
to
hit.
They have leads.
They got to hit. 28th in homers, which is what John, or 28th in slug is what John said earlier. It really comes down to that. If you can get to 15th in slug, and 15th for some of the names in this lineup,
they should be able to.
Really that hard to ask for, man.
They should be able to.
Jackson Merrill, Xander Bogaerts, Manny Machado, and Fernando Tatis Jr., a team with those four, not even talking about Laureano and some of these other dudes who could hit some homers, Sheets. Those, it's embarrassing that they were 28th in home runs. And I know we're going to be able to blame it on the hitting coach because he left. That being said, this year, you got to put up. You got to hit some bombs, man. Because if you hit some bombs with this bullpen and your starters can just survive, we don't need them to be Garrett Crochet. We need them to survive. If you could do that, this could be a really good team.
A healthy Merrill, Laureano for another for a whole season. Tatis with the focus on being consistent. I could have just named for you 25 to 30 more home runs. Yeah, that's 100%. Just those three guys. Now, I said could have. Like, you know, a big thing that we could talk about next week, I assume we'll do a season preview, is where exactly is Manny in his career? So, you know, like, are we still counting on 27, 28 home runs a year? But that's for another time.
Let's spend 5 minutes on the ownership situation, which there's not a ton of clarity, obviously, as of now. Although I know, Kevin, you've been following the story and you've written about it in the last 4 or 5 days. And then we can let Matt sing the praises of Jace Bowen as well.
Yeah, we got to talk Jace.
I'm a Bowen guy.
Yes. So, but the ownership, Kevin, I mean, still steadily moving along with the possibility of some type of sale sooner rather than later. Is that, and maybe, there's still, what, four groups?
Maybe by the second week of April. I mean, I suppose it could be before then, but like, they've kind of set a date that is early April. And, you know, I'm telling you, everybody's looking forward to it. I will just say this, like, we know the three names, and at one point or another, I've heard all three of the names were the favorite. So I've got zero idea for you. I've heard, started to hear some things about where the other candidate, the other of one of the four finalists is from. I do not know who it is, but, like, you know, I've said it before. These are the kind of these sorts of deals. It's not like there's a whole bunch of sources calling people and leaking stuff. And everyone thinks they know something, but they, you know, do they? Not the people that I'm talking to. But well, the bottom line is that the people who do know are convinced this person is coming in. They had the money to buy the team, and they're fired up to own the team. And that should excite everyone.
That's all you got to say, Kev. Honestly, yeah. People act like, oh, I need this guy to own the team. I need this guy to own the team. No, I just need exactly what you said to come true, right? I just need a team. I need an ownership group that wants to win and wants to continue to put a competitive team out. Is the ownership group going to go 24 scoreless? No, the players got to play. But if you continue to put a good team on the field and you get the entire fan base around, there's some serious buzz about the Padres, man. And I say it on a lot of these episodes, but like, I'll walk around in the city in San Francisco. I see Padres hats. I see people. It's a really, really fun team to root for. It's got real legs. And the fact that an ownership group's coming in, they're not buying the 2011 Pods. You know, they're buying a real team, and they're buying a team that has city support.
That's the thing, is they're buying a team that is selling out like virtually every game. They know what they're getting in AJ Preller. They know what the, you know, who they have going forward. They know the financial situation. AJ maybe has already, probably not, but will spell out for that. He will make their head spin on the plans he has. And I'm talking about plans to keep everybody, have plans about how he could spin Xander Bogaerts' contract with this prospect. I mean, I'm telling you, that man is ready to burst in, like, when he gets back to where he can actually make some moves. And so I think people should be excited. I've been trying to temper expectations because we don't know until we know, right? But like I think the Padres are the people in the Padres that, you know, are important and that have at least a little say and stuff are pretty excited.
I would say this, that if the plan is to spend, I hope it gets done sooner rather than later, because I do wonder if you could still impact 2026, because you know how baseball is with late signings and late moves. I mean, the Padres have made late moves where they could acquire potentially salary, you know, once you get into a season. I mean, I look at Dylan Cease, I look at Luis Arraez a couple of years ago.
That was in season May.
Early. So it's like, if you can do it, and you can do it with a pursuit of still having some meat on the bone financially to help your 2020, because if it doesn't close until the middle of the year, you're not really impacting 2026. Yeah. Maybe you're impacting your trade deadline, but if it happens now,
if it doesn't close to the middle of the year, there was a snafu and now you got an issue. And now that person is probably looking ahead going, wait a minute, about next year. And then
what's the TV deal?
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
There seems to be, and I was talking to people in Miami, there seems to be very little doubt that this will get done, early in the season. I think that we have spent a lot of time on what's potentially wrong with the Padres, right? I think they have a good enough team to keep themselves in the running until they can make some moves.
Yeah.
100%, man. And it's a bummer that we are in the same division as a team that has 30% odds to win the World Series. Because if we were in the NL Central, or if we were in the NL East, you know, I think we're getting talked about a little differently, as to be completely honest. And that same team, you know, having the team that wins the division every single year. The Dodgers are great, right? They have that back-to-back World Series. They're a very good team. There's a shocking that we're admitting that on this show. No, it's true. That being said, this Padres team has made we've made the playoffs two straight years. 2024, I genuinely will probably go to my deathbed saying we had the best team yet. That was the year. We choked it. 2025, right? You make the playoffs, you win 90 games, and I really don't think that was that good of a team. And I really don't think all of our stars played to the level that I know they can play. So you tell me now that this team going into this season, who are we really missing right now? Dylan Cease, 32 starts, you know, a 4.7 ERA. Wanted to pull my hair out every time I watched him pitch. Okay, yeah.
All those innings.
Real innings. Yeah, but you can make shift with some of these guys, right? Griffin Canning's coming back. We got some names. I'm excited for this season.
Yeah, I think you should be. I think everyone should be excited for this season.
We better talk about Jace Bowen before the battery runs out or something.
You guys have been watching him more than I have. So Jace Bowen has a 1,000 OPS. He's a 25-year-old journeyman, right? That is an on-roster invitee. He's
had AAA for the first time last year. Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So is he like what's his candidacy?
Go ahead, Matt.
So I'll be honest. You know, there's certain people that you see during spring training and you're like, something, it kind of catches your eye. And the issue with Jace Bowen is because it's either, you know, the spot that he's looking to take is probably Bryce Johnson's, right? And I like Bryce Johnson a lot. Like, I actually really like Bryce Johnson. And if Bryce Johnson's on the opening day roster, go Beach, baby. I'm all in on Bryce Johnson. That being said, watching this guy, Jace Bowen, 25 years old, last year in across four levels in the minors, right, for the Pittsburgh Pirates, he had a looking at it right now, OPS was 802 OPS.
Solid in the International League.
International League, too.
Which is like 1,800 in the PCL.
Sorry? Oh, yeah.
Which is like 1,800 in the PCL.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But no, just watching this guy's at-bats, right, during spring training, because I've watched a decent amount of him during spring training. His swing – And I said in the chat, in our little group chat, and I've seen it on Twitter a few times. I'm not saying he's Mike Trout, but his swing has a little Trout vibe to him, right? He's compact. And I think it was Kevin, you mentioned that. Wasn't he going to be a wide receiver at Michigan State? Like, he's like some crazy, crazy athlete. This is the kind of guy that comes up And we're like, man, dude, remember when no one was even talking about Jace Bowen? And he has a, you know, 12 home run season as our fourth or fifth outfielder. And you know, let's pray that Merrill, Tatis, and Ramon don't miss any games this year. This is the kind of guy that comes up when one of those guys goes on the IL. And maybe he surprises some people. I've really liked watching him play during like when he's up to bat. I honestly go on my phone, and when I see he's up, I'll actually watch the at bat. Like I don't know what it is wow. about him. I just something about
the
his
sick mother.
He's I don't know. I'm a fan.
Listen. They're really excited about him. Let me put that in perspective. Like, not excited like, you know, Jackson Merrill excited, but they're really excited about the potential of this guy to do exactly what you said. Now, week and a half ago, it was, he's going to come up and help us. He just hasn't hit enough this spring, right? Well, in the last week and a half, he's hitting again because he can run. He's stolen five bags. He'd go first to third like a freaking gazelle. He plays the outfield like he's still running routes. Yeah. Like, this guy is good. I wrote a couple weeks ago about the battle, and I led with him because, like I was a Bryce Johnson's going to have to, like, trip over, his third leg to not make this team because of the way he finished last year. He's the incumbent. And I'm telling you, Jace Bowen's pushing him. There is a world – I don't think so, but there is a world with Sungmin Song almost certainly being on the IL to start, that they would both be on the opening day roster. But in terms of who is your enduring fourth outfielder, absolutely a battle. And they really, really like Jace Bowen.
You know what? All things being equal, like, you've gone with the speed bunt guy for Mike Schilt because he does the things that Schilt ball needed. Just go with the guy that can run into a ball. You know what? If you can't move a runner, you can't move a runner. Dude's hit. The guy's raked in the minor leagues. He's hit 70-something home runs. That's hard to do in the minor leagues. He's done it in the Eastern League and the International League. If he goes to freaking El Paso, he's going to hit 35 home runs if they just leave him there and park him there. Because if you hit 20 in the IL, you're going to hit 30 in the PCL. I just like the idea of having a lineup that's more built around guys just running into a ball. And now that's not the Padre way. And I'm not saying this guy's hitting 20 home runs, but just the threat off the bench of someone not bunting, but hitting a ball over the wall. That to me is enough to be compelling.
I'm a big Bryce Johnson guy. Big Bryce Johnson guy. Not like I'm a big Jackson Merrill guy, right? Like, you talk about guys at different levels, right? When we're talking about one of your utility players, I'm a big Bryce Johnson guy. This spring and talking to him, and he's got a little bit of the ass. Like, I mean, he's a big leaguer already, kind of, you know, probably comes from having been an elite athlete, and he and other players are impressed by him. I think Jace Bowen probably has the staying power on this team.
Yeah. I mean, you could just tell with Bowen too, man. Like, there's certain things that you just, like, you're watching this guy play. And I love what you said earlier, right? Like, running like a gazelle. You got an athlete that can actually, there's a reason why, you know, if you have an athlete that can hit, because it all comes down to hitting. Last year, Padres led the league in sack bunts. I don't need a guy that can sack bunt. I assume if you're an athlete, you can learn how to lay down a sack bunt. Give me a guy, like you said, John, that could possibly run into one once in a while, or that can make, and I think Bryce is a very athletic guy too. It's not like we're saying, Jason Hayward or Jace Bowen. Because if it was Jason Hayward or Jace Bowen, I'd be like, yo, Jace Bowen, they're very similar. Jace Bowen hit a 450-foot home run, and that ball sounded like it was a gunshot. And I was like, whoa.
And a beautiful swing. Yeah.
It's compact. It's just, he looks like a guy when he's up there where I'm like, man. And he's playing in spring training. But
The one thing I'll say in Bryce Johnson's, like, the making the case there is that's also a spot you need someone to know baseball and know Major League Baseball. And Bryce Johnson might have him beat there at the beginning of the season. I say might. I don't really know Jace Bowen that well. What I do know is Bryce Johnson knows the role that he needs to play. It's not just, look, like I said, I think the future is probably brighter for Jace Bowen on this team. But coming out of the gate, maybe it is Bryce Johnson, and there's no harm in that.
Yeah, let's end on that note. We got to leave some Bryce Johnson whatever, Jace Bowen, meet on the Bowen for next time. Is this
we'll
such
start
a
with them
topic.
Next week with the season preview so we can make sure we devote enough time to Jace Bowen.
Before we get out of here, we want to remind everyone to subscribe. All right, we are here for you. The season is a week away, so if you have not subscribed, please do that and make sure to smash the like button. Try to get 200 likes on this video. Also, in 60 seconds, Kevin, what are you working on? Where can our viewers find your work?
I got a couple coming up. I got a story coming Sunday on Tatis, and I think the things he said to me were fascinating. I think the things that other people said to me about him were fascinating, and just their goal with him this offseason, this spring, how much pressure this guy puts on himself. I just finished it, and I'm pretty excited about it, and I don't get excited about much. Nick Pivetta story coming out here. The presumptive opening day starter and just what he did last year, the big difference, and then what he's trying to do this year. That's what I got.
Love it.
What do you got, Matt?
Yeah, nothing much. We did a podcast on Monday. We'll be doing another one next week, me and my brother, and then obviously with Pods Collective. Follow us on, Twitter, Instagram, wherever you're on social media. We'll be always posting about the pods, man. I can't wait for opening day. I got to watch. Question for you both. What do you have any traditions before opening day? Do you have anything that you're like, I always do this before opening day? Ever since I met my fiance, we watched Fever Pitch with Jimmy Fallon and Drew Barrymore before opening day. Absolutely love that movie. It's my favorite.
I gotta admit, I do too.
I just love opening day. Like every baseball fan and sports fan, I love it even more in San Diego. It's a really good scene. Downtown. I don't love it against Tarik Skubal, honestly. I hope I do. We'll see. It's baseball. You never know. And he was a big topic, obviously, over the last couple of weeks. But I just, it's opening day. It doesn't get better than that. Of course, you can find me on the radio, San Diego Sports 760 from 2 to 6. I'm actually off the next 2 days because of the NCAA tournament. Thank the Lord. So no shows because we're airing Westwood One's coverage. So I need to find something to do with my time because I've been running like crazy with the Aztecs and with the show and with the YouTube channel. So I'm just going to take a deep breath a week out from the regular season.
John, I think 19th Street Del Mar is calling your name, brother. I think it might be a beautiful day. It might be a beautiful day.
Yeah, I think it's 85 degrees, 90 degrees in Del Mar.
It's 100 degrees in Phoenix until I leave. In the history of recorded temperatures, it has been 100 degrees in March one day. And from today until we leave is 100 every day.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. All right, guys, stay cool. And we will see at some point. We'll let you know when we're back next week. We'll be with you before opening day, which is coming up, obviously, in just 8 days. And again, a reminder, we're here for you. Make sure to subscribe and smash the like button. For Matt Devine and Kevin Acey, I'm John Schaefer. This has been the Padres Collective. Enjoy the night. We'll see you next week. Thanks, guys.